助けてほしいかナナミ。
心を燃やせ、限界を超えろ。
Hello and welcome to More Than Headlines, a weekly anime news podcast powered by Audio Technica, made by Australians for global citizens. I'm your extremely humble host, Brendan White, aka the Salt and Pepper Senpai, and joining me in the studio, my trusted co-host and rival, the Asiapa to my Sugimoto, Miss Courtney Smith. How the bloody hell are you?
I am so good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I've got, I'm still full. I went out for really tasty burgers last night. My mama's in town, so took her to my favorite place in Melbourne. Shout out to Easy's in Collingwood, one of the OGs. Ooh. You can, you got to ascend many a stairwell to get to the top, but they've actually moved like old legacy train carriages and put them on top of the building. So you eat in a train carriage overlooking Melbourne with some of the best burgers in the city. So it was a good time. I ended stupidly with a malt milkshake though, and it nearly put me in a coma.
It sounds like, you know, that game Chain Together when you're trying to ascend to heaven from hell, and there's like a segment with train cars, like you're in Chain Together.
I am, and I'm happily confirming that I survived it. I'm still like, yeah, it's 2:48 p.m. on the 26th of April right now, and I'm still not really hungry from last night. So, yeah, definitely got my money's worth, but I'm probably going to have a good tasty, like, early dinner later and then probably fall into another food coma.
Nice. I didn't realize that not being able to roll your R's was a strange thing. I thought it was kind of normal, but after telling Brendan that I can't do it, I feel like I've been bullied a little bit today.
Well, I'm just trying to get some back on you where I can, because you are, you sort of verbally gut punch me far more often than I do to you. So you know what?
You're welcome. It's my hobby. Well,
that's not very nice. You need to get more hobbies. You need to get new hobbies.
This is why I'm always behind on my anime. I'm too busy thinking of ways to bully. Yeah,
and no one else take up that hobby, please. My emotions and my will is not strong enough to sustain this type of treatment from multiple sources. So just the one bully. Just the one is all character. I can deal with. I've got too much character as it is. I don't need any more. But I can roll the hell out of an R. Brrr. Anyway, we're here, episode 46. We're inching closer to the 50th episode of More Than Headlines, which is very exciting. But Courtney, should we do what we always do and unpack some news? What do you reckon?
Let's do it.
All right, so we're going to be tackling the three biggest or most important news headlines that we managed to uncover this past week. And this is presented by our friends over at Iced Tea Aesthetics, where anime meets streetwear. Go cop some of their fantastic merchandise, just like Courtney and I are rocking today. She's got the Aki Chainsaw Man. I've got the Mai from Rascal Does Not Dream franchise here. Looking and feeling great on that nice, juicy AS color print. Feeling good. But while you're there at the Iced Tea Aesthetics store, be sure to use code SakuraSociety5 at checkout to save yourself some cold, hard cashies on your order. But let's jump into this.
You like the news?
You're damn right I like the news, Courtney. What do you got?
We love the news. Webtoon and PlayStation are partnering up, which means that PlayStation Plus premium users will have access to a Webtoon subscription. Meanwhile, Webtoon subscribers will receive 2 complimentary weeks of PlayStation Plus. The caveat is that to get access to PlayStation Plus, you'll need to read 7 episodes from The Reborn Young Lord is an Assassin, Omniscient Reader's Viewpoint, or Bad Born Blood.
More eyes on a product is never a bad thing, I've got to say, right, Courtney? And I feel the fact that PlayStation Plus currently has a subscriber base of roughly 47 million, give or take a couple there, could lead to a lot of fresh eyes for Webtoon. So, yeah, gold star, double thumbs up as far as a great idea for a collaboration. I'd personally recommend once you jump on Webtoon, if you haven't already, or you're going to do this sort of crazy deal with PlayStation Plus here, is to check out The Greatest Estate Developer, Kind of a High School, Sweet Home, or Unholy Blood. But bear in mind that those PlayStation Plus premium subscriptions for anyone outside of Australia. Here in Australia, it's actually known as a PlayStation Plus Deluxe tier. It's not a cheap undertaking. It's $23.95 per month. Or if you want to front up major bickies and sort of get a little bit of a minor saving, it's $214.95 for the year if you buy up front. So it's not cheap. PlayStation will gouge you for what they can, but I love seeing brands and worlds collide where you can add some more value to your subscription. So I think this is clever, and hopefully it leads to more people checking out some fantastic Webtoons like we've mentioned.
Yeah, I think it definitely is a clever way to bridge the gap between games and manhwa, because they are loosely in the same world. And I think if you're already a big gamer, you have the PlayStation Plus subscription, you have no reason to not get the Webtoon subscription, right? Loads of gamers also enjoyed solo leveling. So if you can and want to explore more of what Webtoon has to offer, then you might be able to pick up a new series that you love.
Because there is many, many fantastic manhwa out there just waiting to be consumed. So do that. On to story number two. Netflix live-action adaptation of popular gambling anime Kakegurui is getting a live-action adaptation called Bet. The official trailer for the series was released roughly 4 days ago, with fans of the original series expressing outrage at the upcoming adaptation.
When I first heard that Kakegurui was getting a live-action adaptation, I wasn't excited, but I didn't really have a problem with it either. I was very much in the I'm not planning on watching this camp, but if it's good, maybe I'll check it out, especially after the One Piece live action adaptation, which was fantastic and fans loved. Then I watched the trailer to this, or should I say I subjected myself to the trailer for Bet, and it's really watered down. And I'm not sure how to explain it, but it feels like Netflix are focusing on the wrong things with this series. I know it's based on the manga, but it's like they just took it and changed it for a Western audience in the worst way possible. And it looks like it's going to be like a weird cooked version of Riverdale, which, to be clear, nobody asked for.
Like, I wouldn't be upset if it focused on Veronica from the live action Riverdale series, because she's a fantastic person in her own right. But yeah, Courtney, this looks shit. It looks so bad. Like, I'm such a big fan of the anime adaptation. I really enjoyed it, and I thought it was a perfect blend of like twisted gambling fun and just shenanigans and hijinks and a bit of cleverness. But Netflix turning, yeah, Kakegurui into a D-grade murder mystery while also westernizing the hell out of this IP is certainly not the play here, in my opinion. I think if you haven't, go watch the anime. As I said, it's great. And if you're hankering for the live action, there's also a Japanese live action adaptation available already, which I haven't seen, but I've heard it's really good and it's reviewed pretty well. So go check those out, because this is going to suck and probably will get canceled after one season as well. So I have zero confidence in this being good. It looks trash, and not in the kind of trash that's going to be enjoyable. It just looks bad.
Just ugh. Bad.
Brother,
just,
ugh. Courtney, ugh.
Yeah. But something that's good, Hyakuemo is a brand new sports anime film from Uoto, the creator of the historical anime Orb on the Movements of the Earth. The film will premiere in Japan on September 19 this year and follows Togashi, a naturally gifted runner who ends up meeting and teaching Komiya how to run as well. After graduating school, the two of them go on to become exceptional athletes, and when they meet again on the running track, emotions, intentions, and drama spill forth.
Color me intrigued on this one, because I am a sucker for a good sports story and an even bigger sucker for a good rivalry. So seeing those two worlds collide with this new IP bodes well, I think. The trailer doesn't give too much away, but I felt it looked pretty good. There was a few janky CGI parts in said trailer where I was like, maybe not. But overall, I enjoyed the art style. I enjoyed the character models and the raw emotion that we're seeing in this minute or so worth of trailer. And knowing that it's a film means I feel we're going to have a story that's going to hit fast and it's going to hit hard. So I'm excited for this. I'm going to try and temper my expectation to get too hyped. But right now I'm feeling this could be a little cheeky banger come later into the year.
So while you're tempering your expectations, I'm really, really hyped for this. I think it's going to be fantastic. I loved Orb on the Movements of the Earth. I think it's the most underrated anime of last year. I also feel like Hyakuemo, also known as 100 Meters in English, will have the same kind of process of discussion and exploration of human emotions that Orb did. So while Orb was focused on obviously like the science and theories of the time, what it really boiled down to was humanity and sociology and how humans kind of interact, I guess, and what they do when confronted with big ideas and big feelings. But I watched the trailer for Hyakuemo and the art style is gorgeous. I loved it. Like, I know what you mean about the janky CGI bits, but I personally really liked them. The art style is beautiful. I hope that we get an Australian release date soon, though, because I really, really want to watch this.
We're looking at you, Sugoisco. Come up clutch. Please. In this moment.
I need it.
No false starts if we're going to bother a sports pun. Let's make it happen.
Yes. No, I need it real bad.
Real bad?
Real bad.
Okay. Well, I know that's coming out in September. We don't have time to wait until then. So let's talk about what we've been watching and sort of consuming this week, Courtney. So lead us off. What have you been up to this past week that's worth chatting about?
Well, I decided to pick up Food for the Soul on a whim last week. I just saw it on Crunchyroll, just like as one of the like poster ones that come up in the homepage. I was like, you know what? I'll do it. I'm a sucker for cute girls doing cute things. I'm a sucker for school and university club anime that are about a specific niche. So I was like, I'll do it. I'll just pick it up. Even if it's bad, it'll be cute. I don't care. It is fantastic. It is so comforting. And if you want a series that you can just put on and watch and it's not stressful, it's very low stakes, but it's still compelling. The way they do it is still really compelling. I highly recommend. I am so glad that you mentioned it, Brendan.
You've just salvaged the thing just there by shouting it out at the end. So thank you, because I was about to take a little small victory lap and do it. I told you so, because this was one of my on the list for sort of spring as far as what I was keen to check out. And you were pretty out on it, but I'm happy that you're in, because like you said, it's cozy, low stakes, slice of life sweetness, a great endearing cast, like a good group of girlies just living their best life, trying to survive early adulthood and study and university, and then sort of seeing this club come together through false pretense, which really made me sort of chuckle as well, because there is some comedy and some humor involved here. But it's a good time. Like, food and friendship are two of my favorite things on planet Earth, and we're getting that with Food for the Soul. Like, it's really enjoyable. I think it's rated around 7.5-ish on my anime list at the moment. So it's reviewing really well. It's inoffensive. It's decently animated. And the cast is great. Like, there's a lot of like real life emotion that some of these girls are dealing with that I think a lot of us can relate with, especially like you're seeing some of like the social anxiety that Mako is dealing with. You know, even as little things where she's so embarrassed and nervous to go explore and enjoy all these restaurants because she doesn't want to be seen as a solo eater. Like, I was that for years with solo eating as well as like solo cinema sessions, but now I am like so far down that path where it is one of my favorite things to do, because it's just you and that meal or that film and nothing else matters, and it's a great time.
I just think Food for the Soul is one of the shows that overall has helped bring up the caliber of shows this season, because I feel like it was good, but it wasn't fantastic. And Food for the Soul being on that list, being, you know, pretty high up the list of good shows this season, really is helping boost it. And I adore it. It's so cute.
Me too. But yeah, a lot of dead ducks this season so far. Like, there's a lot of bad anime that we're watching.
Yes, but the other good things I've been watching, Black Butler Emerald Witch Arc episode 3, I just watched. I feel like it's been ages since we've seen CL's life on the line like this. Like, in the first season of Black Butler, the second season, we got a lot of CL being in danger and Sebastian really like having to push himself to help him. And I feel like recently with the past arc as well, with the public school arc, there wasn't as many high stakes. It was very much like, oh, Sebastian, can you give the enemy or the opposing team food poisoning so we beat them in soccer? And it's like, you know, that's very low stakes compared to what's happening in Emerald Witch Arc. So seeing Sebastian struggle, he doesn't know what to do to protect his master. He doesn't know how to help him. And it's really just gripping and horrifying. And it's calling back to those horror themes from the original series that I love. And the way that they drew, so in this season, if they walk into a forest, they get cursed and the curse affects their bodies physically, and it is disgusting. The way they drew it is so gross, and I'm so here for it.
I don't know why I stopped watching Black Butler. It wasn't through lack of enjoyment. Like, I really enjoyed my first foray with this series, and for some reason or another, I've just been frozen to jump back in. But hearing you talk about this Emerald Witch arc, it's given me a little bit of FOMO. So maybe over the next couple of months, I need to play catch up and sort of get all the previous viewing up to date, because I want to see these disgusting curses and I want to see these dudes out there doing their thing, because it is a cool concept. It's a cool world. It's cool characters. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know why it's not on my radar at the moment. Like, I feel dumb saying that out loud, but I'll get back there.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of the time, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I think Black Butler is seen as a very girly anime. So I think a lot of male anime watchers tend to avoid it just because of that preconception. But as we know, Brendan, you're very much open to anything. So I'm sure you'll get back on it, and I'm very excited for that.
Ooh, yeah.
Finally, I've been watching Mono. I just watched episode 2. It is so cute. It's just a little anime about a photography club, some high school girls. It's really fun. And this episode, we got some new characters introduced because their club was about to be shut down. And they're like, how do we keep the club alive? So we get some new characters in, which makes it really, really fun. Seeing them try to figure out, they can't afford a drone. So they're like, we know, we'll just attach a camera to a kite. And one of them's really bad at flying the kite, so they get shit footage, but it's so fun.
It is super really enjoyable, super inoffensive. It's in that same vein as Food for the Soul, like where it's just you chuck this on, you have a good time, you leave the episode credits with a smile. And yeah, I've been enjoying Mono as well. It's a sneaky little comfort watch.
It's very good. But what have you been watching, Brendan?
So I just wanted to highlight two before we sort of jump into our sort of weekly deeper dive review. Rock is a Lady's Modesty. The OP by Bandmade is such a goddamn tone setter, and I love it. And it's just a brilliant little toe tapper that just puts you in the mood and the right train of thought for what's to come with these crazy chaotic girls. I'm really enjoying the rivalry and the relationship continued to develop between Lilisa and Atoha. I feel that is the foundation, the heartbeat of Rock as a Lady's Modesty right now. But I'm also enjoying that the story is starting to expand a bit more and we're seeing more plot threads begin to develop. We've got the formation of their band and their search for additional members being the main hook for the series. And I love that they're sort of teasing us already, because we see these band members in the opening and the ending, yet they've not been introduced to us. We don't know who they are, what they're about. We've just seen their look and feel and vibe. So I'm like, man, I'm just waiting. So I'm a bit bummed that we haven't got that third or fourth person yet. So the story pacing has slowed a little bit this last episode, I'll admit. But outside of that, I'm also loving that we're getting this constant drama and hatred that's coming from Lilith's stepsister, Alice. Like, she's just a nasty little thing. I know she's going to have like a bit of a redemption arc eventually and probably become the nice stepsister that we all hope that Lilisa will have in her family. But right now, she's just a poisonous, toxic little thing that just wants Lilisa and her mum to be far, far, far away from their father. And so it's a little bit nasty, a little bit irky there. But I feel, yeah, we've got some big time tea sort of brewing there with that sort of family dynamic. And we're going to see that tea boil over potentially part of a two-parter here, where we've got the Midori Festival, where we're seeing the girls sort of join and assist like an over 40 sort of chilled out band that needed a few bandmates at short notice to play at this Midori Festival. So they're going to go along and play with a bunch of these older gentlemen and women at this like local community center. But also Alice and her friend, you see where this episode ends, where they're both sort of heading on a collision course here. So I'm super excited to see how this is all going to play out. Super excited to meet these new bandmates. It's still so gorgeously animated. And I love just the chaotic freneticness of the relationship between our two leads at the moment. Like, they're just at each other like cats and dogs, and yet they love each other. And I love that Atoha, she's a bit of a fiend. She's a bit of a cheeky fiend. Like, the way she's talking about how she envisions jam sessions with other musicians being like this sexy foreplay, almost like pornographic type of scenario. Like, it is so great. And I love just her dynamic and her personality. This is, yeah, great to sometimes amaze tier for me. I'm loving Rock as Lady's Modesty still.
Me too, but I do agree with you on not having kind of the rest of the ensemble on screen yet. And I know it's obviously going to take time, but I am really keen to get some new characters in to spice things up a little bit.
Yeah, God, it's so pretty. I love the animation for this. And something else that I've been loving, Sword of the Demon Hunter. So episode 2 and 3. I don't know if you've watched any Sword yet, Courtney. Have you jumped in?
I am up to date, except for the newest episode, which dropped. Oh, wait, no. I'm fully up to date, actually. Yes.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. So after that massive, big 50-minute first episode banger, we've got episode 2 and 3. A little slow paced, but I feel it still remains one of the best anime of this spring season so far. We get a 10-year time jump where we see Jinta, now going by the name of Jinya. He's sort of a full-fledged demon hunter traveling around Japan, pretty much killing demons for money as he sort of starts to try and enact his very slow burn plot for revenge off the back of what happened in episode 1. We get a lot of introduction to several new characters in these sort of second and third episodes, including Jinya's dad. And they just sort of casually just throw that out there. And you're like, well, I beg your pardon, what? But great drama from that. And we also get introduced to this one particular demon who just wants to live a simple life. He can sort of, he's found love and he doesn't want to sort of be the stereotypical demon that's just killing and eating and pillaging and raping and doing all these bad things. He just wants to live a good life with his lady. He's also got this ability where he can become invisible. So he's like one of the good character introductory standpoints I find in these couple of episodes after that fantastic first episode. Sitting in the great tier, really enjoying it because there's some really cool quiet moments in these episodes as well that just really adds this beautiful weight to just the chaos and the violence and the death and the destruction that also sort of weaves in and out of this story. It's so good, Courtney.
I think the slower pace of it really, really suits it and sets the tone. I think if it was faster paced, it would be more shonen-y, and I don't love that. So I like the way they're doing it, where it is slower, a little bit more thoughtful, more intentional. And I don't know if you've seen the latest episode, but it really starts to ramp up. We get some plot twists, and I love it.
Yeah, it's so good. And just the ending of that first episode still sits with me so strongly. Like, it's one of the strongest debut episodes I've seen in a good long time. I haven't watched episode 4 yet. That's going to be part of my viewing later tonight, but I'm excited for it because I love where this story's going. I love the pacing. I love the art style. And just, I love the concept that we've got here. Like, it is one of the surprise packets of the spring season, I got to say.
Definitely.
Yeah, I want to shout out quickly what I've been reading. Off the back of the Kodansha Awards that we mentioned, I think 2 episodes or so ago now, I jumped into How I Met My Soulmate, which is illustrated and written by Anashin. It's been really enjoyable. I've smashed through all 16 chapters this past week, so I'm up to date now. I'm waiting very impatiently for what's to come. It's a fun and fairly straightforward shoujo romance story, but it is full of drama, misreads and some hot boys. So there is some positive sort of boxes getting checked here. It did take a little bit for me to get fully invested, though, I'll admit. But once our MC sort of Yuki ends up befriending the cool and very smoldering Iori, that's where I was like, I'm in. I love this dynamic. I can't wait to see where this goes. I like that we're not waiting 100 to 200 chapters for her to finally fall into a relationship. Like, I'm not saying who she's in a relationship with at this point in time, but she's in a relationship now that I'm up to date. And so it's nice to see that we're now getting into the depth of, you know, is this her soulmate? Is there going to be a big misdirect? And it's actually someone we haven't met yet, but it's just fun. It's wholesome. It's real. The misdirection and the misreads do annoy me sometimes in storytelling where it's like, you can't be this dumb. Just communicate. So we get a bit of that, but luckily I think that's sort of mostly been ironed out. But this is sitting in the good to sometimes great tier for me. Like, it's an enjoyable read. The illustration, the art style, super clean. The characters, like I said, are gorgeous. The boys, yeah, are hot, hot, hot. And it's very inoffensive. And I like that it's more of a like adult toned romance story. We've got these people that are, you know, 20 and 23 respectively. It's a good time.
Okay, I think I have to check this one out. Everything you have said for the past minute has been nothing but things that I like to hear. So I think I'll check it out.
It's very unlike a lot of the battle, like the power fantasy stuff that I've been reading. So it's been a nice sort of hard hook turn to something fresh, and it's wholesome, and I love, and there's a lot of this on display here in these 16 chapters so far.
All right, I'm ready.
You ready?
Yeah.
You're ready for How I Met My Soulmate? You're ready for the deeper dive?
I'm ready for How I Met My Soulmate, and I am so ready for our review of Kalyan Generic Romance Episode 3.
Ooh, yeah. So Episode 3 opens with a flashback of Kudo and Reiko helping an old man fix up his apartment. And this scene sets a weirdly cozy tone. As they leave, Kudo suddenly collapses, saying he's dizzy, which gives Reiko a reason to take him back to her place. Ooh, this moment is super intimate, and you can feel the tension building between them. I was all for this.
Yes, and this is great because it fixes into something else. At Reiko's place, there's a little detail. She offers him some water, not just any water. It's tap water that she's left in the fridge overnight to remove the chlorine smell. It's such a small thing, but it shows how thoughtful she is, maybe even a little old-fashioned. Kudo looks around her apartment and notices it's pretty bare, no plushies, nothing particularly feminine. And that really stands out to him, especially later when we see some of this repeated.
Totally, Courtney, totally. And then Kudo starts talking about how interesting Kowloon is, how it gives off a nostalgic vibe, what's really cool here. I liked the visual shift in these sort of scenes. We're seeing the old Reiko he imagines is drawn in a very different, more 90s art style, which really emphasizes that nostalgic feeling that they've sort of been spoon-feeding us the last couple of episodes. Then we see Kudo at work with Dr. Hibanuma, and the energy completely shifts. Hibanuma's sitting on Kudo's shoulder like some smug demon parrot talking about opening another clinic.
And Hibanuma is just a creepy guy. Like, he's got this weird obsession with Reiko. He stares at her, and then just as he's leaving, he turns around, grabs her, and kisses her. We, like, see his snake tongue, like, slipping into her mouth. It's so gross. And Kudo looks like he's about to lose it. It's an understandable reaction, and there's definitely some deeper tension between these characters, and Hibanuma is obviously not your average doctor.
Yeah, like I've seen a few doctors over the years, and I do not remember this ever happening in my sessions, and I'm very thankful for that, because this gave me the heebie-jeebies, Courtney. Then we head to a general store scene where Reiko and Kudo are browsing, and she picks out a fish tank. Kudo offers to carry it back for her. Super wholesome moment. But what's trippy is that the old man at the shop says the exact same thing he said in the flashback. From that point, the episode kind of loops. We get similar scenes from earlier, but Reiko's behavior is subtly different. This time, she's more closed off and even has a generic Terra plush in her room. Uh-oh. Which Kudo has noted was missing before. It's like reality is glitching or repeating on itself.
And in this loop like moment almost, we have this gorgeous music, dreamy, melancholy, perfectly matching Reiko. She names her new fish Success, and Kudo leaves, but not before touching the eight on the front of her apartment, which we know is his kind of quirk. And it's symbolic. There's something he's trying to remember, you know, he's trying to bring himself back to that time, that flashback. Next day at work, Reiko gives Kudo a flower, and then chaos. Shaohei storms in, demanding a new apartment because she has too many clothes and she needs somewhere to put all of her stuff.
Talk about first world problems, right? So yeah, Shaohei notices the flower and casually drops the bomb that its meaning is, I only have eyes for you, which makes Reiko totally freak out. She drags Shaohei off for apartment inspections, clearly trying to avoid that awkward moment that just transpired. After checking out seven places, Jesus Christ, Reiko asks if Shaohei would ever leave Kowloon. Shaohei says she doesn't want to, and then adds, that's how I felt back then too. Dun, dun, duh. Like she's remembering something, but when Reiko presses her, Shaohei draws a complete blank.
I had to rewatch that scene, like to make sure I was hearing what I was hearing. But later on, Kudo shows Shaohei an apartment with lots of storage. It has a weird floor plan, but loads of storage, and she loves it. And he explains to Reiko, he's like, look, it's not just about, you know, if the floor plan's good or not. It's about what the tenant needs. Reiko's out getting a watermelon juice when she drops a coin and a masked man picks it up. And we'll come back to him in a second, because the scene then cuts to Hibanuma's place, which is this... it's like a mansion, which is wild. He's not in Kowloon. He's on the outskirts or outside of Kowloon. So he's living in this huge mansion, which is very different to where everyone else is living in Kowloon. And we see two maids gossiping that he's the child of a mistress, T. And then things get really weird because we go cut to his bedroom and we see the masked man from earlier naked in Hibanuma's bed. Turns out he's Gwen, the bartender that's been missing.
There is so much going on in this episode. Like, I know there have been slow playing a lot of this the previous couple of episodes, but it feels like episode 3 is just crescendoing big time with a lot of just ripple effect from the previous ones and just also then pouring us, like we're drowning in tea right now. Like I've got like Earl Grey in my eyes, in my mouth, in my ears. Like I can't see a damn thing because there's so much going on. But anyway, Gwen and Hebunuma, they have this very cryptic conversation about Gwen's appearance, and Hebunuma calls someone who's been investigating Reiko. He then takes off his robe to reveal this massive snake tattoo, not a euphemism. The symbolism with him is so on the nose, but it works. Meanwhile, Kudo is out searching for Gwen, hitting many a dead end. One guy tells him Gwen's apartment doesn't even exist in the area. Everything's feeling more and more and more surreal at this moment.
Yeah, the lines of past, present, and future are really blending together, and we get this really intense rooftop scene where Reiko, she's smoking, she's suddenly joined by the masked man, by Gwen, and she knows it's him, and their conversation is really heartbreaking. Gwen tells her she's not the real Reiko, and she's basically destroying the memory of his old friend, so now we know that Gwen also used to be good friends with Reiko, and now this new Reiko is just not her, and she is, you know, essentially taking her life for her own. He even says, it feels like a total stranger is trampling on the memory of my friend, and that was truly heartbreaking.
Yeah, that line was heavy, and you can see as well in this moment, it wrecks Reiko. Like Gwen then says he'll be seeing Kudo soon, and you can see Reiko really starting to spiral, really starting to try and process and comprehend what the hell is going on here. She's questioning if this is the life, this life even belongs to her in these moments. The sunflower she gave Kudo is now dying, and in a real gut punch moment, he tells her he hates her. It's like, what? I beg your pardon. She tosses the flower out, and it's just such a heavy emotional beat for this story. And you can see her just unraveling as the seconds tick by. Like you wanted to almost reach in and like just give her a hug and try and like pull her out of this type of situation and circumstance, because it is heavy.
Yeah, I can really feel for current Reiko and her just like trying to live her life, but it's not hers, and people are telling her it's not hers, but it is hers. But finally, Reiko's vision starts to get worse again. She confronts Kudo, who's asking who she really is, and even confesses her feelings for him. But Kudo tells her that her love is just an illusion. And I just have to pause here for a second, because you cannot say that. You are not allowed to tell someone what their feelings are or aren't. And him telling her that her love for him is not real is really, really gross. Mm-hmm. But then Reiko has a coughing fit and she collapses, and the episode ends on this really just emotionally raw and really confusing note. And we're left wondering here, is Reiko real? Who's manipulating what? What's going on with all this memory stuff? And what is Kowloon?
It was a heavy and thought-provoking episode for sure. I really enjoyed it, but yeah, tonally, it shifted from sort of like, oh, cute potential, will they, won't they get back together romance from sort of episode 1 to heartbreak and gut punch and just horrible, horrible things taking place throughout the entirety of this 20-odd minute run. Like, I completely agree. Like, when Kudo tells her that her love is an illusion, that is one of, like, the cruelest things anybody could ever say to somebody. Like you should never dismiss people's thoughts and feelings, no matter what they are, no matter how little you can understand and comprehend said thoughts and feelings. They're feeling them, so it doesn't make them any less real or any less correct. So yeah, hearing Kudo say that, it really triggered and sort of hit me pretty hard and got me really upset. I didn't really like Kudo much from the get-go, and I like him a lot less now that we're 3 episodes in and he's sort of doing this to Reiko, because she deserves better. But I can't stop watching this, Courtney. I am so goddamn engrossed. It's so unlike anything else we're watching this season.
Truly, the way that it shifts tonally constantly is so impressive. Like every time that Kudo thinks back to the old Reiko, how the art style changes, the colors are vibrant, and then when he comes back, it's really muted and gray, and she looks more modern in terms of anime art style. And the music this episode, there was just like a like a little montage scene this episode with gorgeous music, and I want to rewatch the episode just to hear the music again because it was really, really pretty.
It's so good. Like, I am surprised that it's only getting a 7.76 on my anime list at the moment. Like, that's still a very strong score, don't get me wrong, but I feel that this anime is playing chess where everything else out there we're watching this season is playing checkers. Like, it is so different and so unique. And to production and the direction team behind the way they're sort of telling this story, and like you said, Courtney, just the shifts in art style and color palette and sound, it's so subtle but so expertly crafted. Like, it is so good. It is so good. And it's getting more and more like Twin Peaks-y by the day, and I love it.
I think it's all in that intentionality, right? Like, every single line, every single camera angle, every single color used is so intentional. And I really, there's nothing I adore more than when an anime does that, when everything is woven together so precisely that it builds into something really, really beautiful, but really almost terrifying because they've done such a good job. And you can't look away, right?
Yeah, I'm so hooked. And like, Arvo Animation, the studio behind this, like, this is their ninth IP that they've tackled. Like, they haven't done a ton of anime up until this moment, and it feels like this is almost their coming out party, because the art style, I cannot get enough of it, and I cannot wait to see where this story goes, because my goodness, the twists and turns, like, it feels like I'm playing 17 games of Twister at once. Like, my body is so contorted and twisted and in pain but also intrigued, because there's just so much happening and I love it.
Yes, but let's get on to our final comments for the episode. My thing that I want to shout out is that my shirts from Ice Tea Aesthetics came in, obviously, and I am so obsessed with them. The quality is so good. So I got two of the lighter shirts. This is one of the lighter ones, my Aki shirt, and I have a Gabi Maru one as well from Hell's Paradise. Those are some lighter shirts in terms of like material weight.
They're not the heavyweight sort of style print.
Yeah. And then the other two I got, I have an Okarun one and Daddy Nanami, of course. Those are the heavier weighted shirts. They're both so comfy, but both so different. And I really, really like that you can kind of choose what kind of style you want.
Yeah, they've got literally something for everybody over there at Ice Tea Aesthetics. Like, they've got all, like, the who's who of anime is available on there, and they're done in such unique and cool and funky and subdued ways as well. Like, if you don't want something that's just screaming, I am super weeb fan number one, they've got stuff that only anime fans will know with really simple branding and logos and character usage. Or if you want something that, yeah, you want to scream, I am super weeb fan number one, they've got that too. And the fact that it is on AS Color, which I feel is sort of the best blank company out there. Fun fact, all the Sakura Society merchandise is printed on AS Color as well. So it'll look and feel just like these fantastic Ice Tea Aesthetic shirts are there. So yeah, looking good. I saw your little mini photo shoot. You are rolled out for one of the first designs, and minor spoilers, I think there's more to come.
Yes, so I did one little mini photo shoot with my Okarun tea, but I've just done three more with the other three teas that I got, and I'm so excited. So there's some little styling tips for you if you're keen to get Ice Tea Aesthetics but not sure how to wear them.
Definitely with a t-shirt, usually put it over your head first, then your arms through afterwards. But if you want to know how to go beyond that, Courtney is the one to help you sort of take your streetwear game to the next level.
Oh, that's good. Thank you so much as well to our producers, Orny, Duffo, and Matthew C. Your support means a lot to us. And if you're not currently part of our Patreon, you can join for free and get some extra little bits and pieces here and there. Otherwise, join our Discord as well, because we are always online chatting and gaming and having a good time.
Hell yeah. So patreon.com/Sakura Society. Three paid tiers there as well, getting you exclusive access to perks, content, and swag you will not find anywhere else on planet Earth. You can go to sakurasociety.co/shop to get yourself some of our merchandise. But if you are a little cash trapped this week, don't worry. You can support us non-monetarily by rating, reviewing, subscribing us on your podcast platform of choice or on the video platform of choice as well. And if you do chuck a subscription and a comment on one of our videos on YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok over the next 2 weeks, you'll go in the draw to win yourself an Iced Tea Aesthetics t-shirt of your choosing. So this giveaway is valid for anyone on planet Earth. As long as you've got a postal address and we can get this shirt to you, we will get you in the draw for that. So head on over to YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok at the Sakura SOC. Chuck a subscription on there, chuck a comment on one of our videos, and you'll go in the draw and we'll announce the winner on episode 48 of More Than Headlines. But Courtney, that brings us to the end. Any other last quick shout outs before we get on out of here?
I love my shirt. I keep looking at it. I'm like, oh, this is my new favorite shirt.
Yeah. Mikey Pye, who's done both these designs we're rocking right now on behalf of the collab with Iced Tea Aesthetics, hell of an artist, does some fantastic stuff. So check out his work and just support local artists where you can. It doesn't take a ton of time, take a ton of money, but it will mean the world to content creators and artists like ourselves, whether your anime be subbed, dubbed, or still yet to come. Enjoy yourself, and much love to all the gorgeous waifus and husbandos out there. Goodbye.
Mata ne.